You're listening to the free abridged edition of the Energy Transition Show.
Oil, coal, hydro, nuclear energy, natural gas,
energy infrastructure,
solar power,
wind turbines.
It feels like there isn't enough oil to keep up with the rise in demand that I believe is likely over the next 3 or 4 years.
The difficult problem is the fossil fuel industry has to go away.
For April 3rd, 2024, this is the Energy Transition Show with Chris Nelder. If you've paid any attention at all to the business press over the past couple of years, you know that the number one story they've covered is inflation. They've discussed rising prices and the Federal Reserve's attempts to tamp it down by raising interest rates every day for hours and hours, because inflation and interest rates have a massive effect on the entire economy, affecting your ability to buy everything from a dozen eggs to a car or a home. What they don't discuss much is why inflation is happening. And even when they do, they never connect those causes to the ongoing project of the energy transition. But they are connected, intimately. In fact, as you'll hear at the end of today's interview, endless interventions by the Fed may be an unavoidable consequence of the energy transition, from now until the project is complete, some decades from now. Indeed, members of the Federal Reserve have argued that inflation in the 1970s and 80s was caused by the rising price of oil, and that although that was largely beyond the control of monetary policy, the Fed still had to intervene. And many, including yours truly, have argued that the inflation that accompanied the great financial crash of 2008, along with the numerous interventions that were invented to cope with it, was also intimately connected to rising oil prices. And since the Russian invasion of Ukraine in 2022, it has become abundantly clear that natural gas and oil prices were the primary forces behind the global inflationary pressures that the Fed and other central banks have been fighting ever since. So why aren't we having a conversation about how Putin's invasion ultimately led to your having to pay more for everything, as inflation was transmitted through from fossil fuels to everything you buy? Why did Congress give us the Inflation Reduction Act in 2022 instead of the Fossil Fuel Reduction Act? And what is the role of the Fed in the energy transition? To help us disentangle these threads and understand the causal connections between fossil fuels and inflation, we welcome back to the show Gernot Wagner. He joined us previously in episode 69 when he was teaching at Harvard. Today, he is a climate economist at Columbia Business School, where he continues his research and teaching and maintains an impressive output of articles about the economics of climate action. In today's conversation, we discuss the relationships between fossil fuels and inflation, why the Fed acts as it does, and many of the ins and outs of the Inflation Reduction Act in the U.S. and the Repower EU policy package in the EU, as well as many geopolitical facets of these complex policy questions. Then in the news segment, we'll check out a new analysis of how much inflation actually owes to corporate profits. We'll see how European countries are angling to eliminate imports of Russian natural gas. We'll take an early glimpse at an offshore floating solar project. We'll find out what ignited the worst wildfire in Texas history. And we'll note a sharp turn to EVs for a Jaguar Land Rover. And now, our conversation with Gernot Wagner, recorded March 5th, 2024. So let's bring him back into the conversation now. Welcome back, Gernot, to the Energy Transition Show.
Great to be here.
It's been a long time, actually, since we had you on the show, way back in 2018 in episode 68. But it's not for lack of relevant material. You've been busily writing and speaking on the energy transition and climate all the while, and interested listeners can find your work on your website at gwagner.com. Anyway, it's great to have you rejoin us. I'm going to ask you for a bit of forbearance here because I want to just do a quick recap of how we got to the present moment, and then we can really dive into the discussion. What prompted me to invite you back was an article that you wrote for Heatmap titled "The Ukraine War Blew Up the World's Energy Economy." In it, you review the run-up to Russia's invasion of Ukraine 2 years ago and how the invasion kicked off a massive spike in natural gas prices in Europe. They went from under 25 euros per megawatt hour prior to 2022 to around 340 euros per megawatt hour at the peak in August 2022, and then crashed back to under 25 euros per megawatt hour today. That obviously caused a lot of pain across Europe, as we discussed in detail with Bloomberg's Will Kennedy in episode 183. But in addition to causing damage to the economies of European countries, and even a short-term increase in coal-fired generation because gas had suddenly become so much more expensive than coal, It also caused Europe's policymakers to really get serious about weaning their countries off of gas, largely through deploying a lot more wind, solar, and heat pumps. The wind and solar to displace gas-fired power generators, and heat pumps to displace gas-fired boilers for heating. Similar results ensued from parallel, although far less dramatic, spike in oil prices. The European benchmark Brent went from around $77 a barrel before 2022 to around $120 a barrel in June 2022, before settling back to around $82 today. That, too, prompted Europe to respond with various policies aimed at reducing oil demand, like accelerating the transition from oil burners to electric vehicles. The U.S., by virtue of being the world's leading producer of oil and gas at this point, was somewhat insulated from these price shocks, which were far more muted in domestic price terms. But the elevated prices of oil and gas eventually passed through to the prices of all sorts of goods, and that led to rising inflation across the economy. And that helped to create the justification for the Inflation Reduction Act, the largest piece of federal legislation ever to address climate change, which will likely result in the federal government spending over $1 trillion on provisions related to energy security and climate change. But it was billed as the Inflation Reduction Act, not a Climate Change Act, and certainly not anything specifically about fossil fuels. Now, thanking you for your patience while I got that background out of the way, I wanted to talk about how fossil fuel prices drive inflation, or as you put it in your article, fossilflation. To start with, how much of what has been broadly referred to in the U.S. as inflation actually owes to rising prices for fossil fuels?
Well, depends when and how you look at the data. And it depends on both. And that's frankly the tricky bit, right? So sometimes when economists look at inflation statistics, we deliberately exclude fuel, energy, and food because we consider them as too volatile, and then there's a thing called core inflation that excludes those two crucial factors. And frankly, you know, so crucial that little else seems to matter in how we often, as individuals, households, view the actual implications. Okay, so to your question on, right, how high the effect of fossil fuel prices, at the spike in summer 22, so this is ancient history now, but it is the summer when the Inflation Reduction Act was passed, that summer, July, August, fossil fuel prices spiking dominated inflation statistics. So in this heat map piece you referred to, actually I dug up the data and tried to dissect them, and it's actually hard to deduce anything other than energy prices were responsible for almost everything, and in certain months for more than everything. As in, other prices actually declined, fossil prices increased by so much that literally all of inflation, overall inflation, was due to the spike in gas. And by the way, gas in both senses, European gas, methane gas, and gasoline oil.
Right. Okay, so obviously a huge effect, a huge component of what we call inflation was actually rising fossil fuels.
And in a funny way, this is the sort of thing that, whoops, every 8-10 years or so, we have one of these spikes. And every time we somehow seem to be surprised that that's possible. I mean, not really, we know what it is, but we basically remain at the mercy of these, in this case, Putin blowing a fuse. But in general, it's sort of some random geopolitical event, and maybe not so random geopolitical event halfway around the world, that hurts here domestically at the kitchen table, proverbial. So literally, right, grocery bills, and in this case, gas bills, go up dramatically. Energy bills go up dramatically. And this is my argument, that the Inflation Reduction Act has the perfect name to actually get off that overall dependence, not now, not immediately, in the long run.
Okay, well, if that's the perfect name, Why do you think so many commentators fail to point out the relationship between fossil fuel prices and inflation? I mean, I'm a news junkie. I read the news every day. I even tune into shows on CNBC and Bloomberg TV regularly, which only interests like a business audience. And while they do talk about inflation, like every damn day since before the Russian invasion, they rarely mention fossil fuel prices in the same show, let alone the same breath. Instead, they talk about inflation as if it was this autonomous beast under no one's control, just following its own lead and doing its own thing for its own mysterious purposes. I mean, why do you think that is?
Well, because our attention span is that of a squirrel or whatever animal analogy. Yeah, there's certainly a bit of that. And to be clear, the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, has not and will not cut inflation overnight, right? So in some sense, it is a horrible Biden re-election strategy, if that's what they were going for with that name. It's horrible, because basically it is objectively possible to point out that the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act in August 22 does nothing, has done very little to nothing to actually decrease inflation before this coming November, because it is a much longer term strategy to address our overall massive dependence on fossil fuels. And in that sense, it has the perfect name, right? But that's the long game. That's the long term. So why does CNBC commentators not point it out? Because frankly, it's always, oh, let's interpret yesterday's or today's news to make it relevant to audiences today, and frankly, not worry about what happens tomorrow.
I mean, even this concept of so-called core CPI, leaving out food and energy, seems like a bad joke to me. Like, what's more core than food or energy?
All right, so actually, in a funny way, I won't name the specific names now necessarily, but Fed Economist sends me a very well thought through email after this heat map piece, and basically, in some sense, wants to agree with me. Let me put it, you know, obviously I'm somewhat biased here, but yeah, right, wants to basically say, hey, interesting framing, but then the next six paragraphs were all about justifying why macroeconomists typically do prefer core inflation as a statistic, which explicitly excludes energy, explicitly excludes food, because they are too volatile and, you know, it's hard to make Fed policy. And I agree. Actually, I do agree. I mean, I can't claim I'm a macroeconomist myself, so I trust the interpretation of others in this case. But honestly, okay, maybe it does make sense to take a step back and say, hold on a second here. Why do we have not a sole guidance for macroeconomic interest rate Fed policy, this core inflation metric? But as far as in the purview of the Fed, getting off fossil fuels in the long run isn't, in fact, in Jay Powell's toolkit. So the Fed, in setting these interest rates, can't take as guidance the long-term vision of getting off fossil fuels and fixing climate change and so on, not stabilizing temperatures, right? Like, that's not their target. That's not what they're supposed to be doing, if you will. Now, that said, yeah, I think it is pretty darn clear that this dependence on fossil fuels causing this crazy volatility, leading us to ignore the volatility, that all of this does matter, should matter.
Okay. Now, a moment ago, you said that the Inflation Reduction Act hasn't had a material effect on inflation yet. And we're going to talk about the Fed in a minute. But I just want to briefly note that the Fed has become much more dovish in the past several months. They've not raised interest rates in a while. There's even a lot of chatter on the street about potential rate cuts later in the year. And it seems like Powell and the rest of the Fed have come in for some praise for pulling off sort of a Goldilocks landing, as it's sometimes referred to,
yep,
where they're approaching their inflation target rate and the economy hasn't fallen apart. The other indicators like employment and so on are within more or less reasonable zones. So clearly something has moderated the inflation that we had, and I guess we have to credit the Fed and its increase in interest rates for that.
Yes, and this is maybe exactly the reason why said unnamed Fed macroeconomist would then say, okay, so had we taken as guidance something other than core inflation, which does ignore fossil fuel prices, we could not have formulated policies that would have led us to conclude that that's something we've got to do. Put differently, the Fed couldn't, shouldn't jump every time fossil fuel prices spike. Maybe that's another way of putting this. And actually, here's the thing, I agree. It doesn't mean that there isn't a role for us to take those fossil fuel price uncertainties seriously, consider them in policymaking, and maybe this is precisely where, well, something like the Inflation Reduction Act comes in, where Bidenomics, if you will, comes in, where the realization comes in that we've got to do something here about our long-standing dependence on fossil fuels. Well, by the way, the fact that domestic oil and gas production has gone through the roof, actually, does very little here. Now, yes, on a daily basis, we send less money to the Middle East. We send now none to very little money to Russia for their fossil fuels, which is all good, but prices still fluctuate. Oil is still traded on a global market, and you know, gas That's is right. more regional, but global enough, or linked enough, especially now with massive increase in LNG, leading to these interconnections and leading basically to the fact that as long as there is this integrated energy market for oil and gas, there will be these interconnections where our prices spike because Putin blows a fuse.
Yeah. And LNG, as you point out, is increasingly making the gas market much more global, yep. whereas it used to be a lot more regionally constrained.
And there are arguments where you could basically say that that's a good thing. Yeah. A more global, more integrated market is good. Energy interdependence is better than energy independence, if you will, which, yes, is not achievable. But here's the real point, of course, that this is now goes to electricity as opposed to oil and gas. And yes, gas is used to produce our electrons still and will be for a while. And so this globally integrated gas market now means that all our electricity prices too will spike when Putin blows the fuse.
That's right.
Which now it has much bigger implications, including, of course, for the energy transition.
We hope you've enjoyed this free sample of the Energy Transition Show. Our full episodes cover much more and are typically 60 to 90 minutes long. When you become a full annual subscriber, you'll get 2 new complete episodes each month, access to our entire back catalog, extensive show notes, interview transcripts, the text of the news items for each episode, and access to our exclusive job board. Your premium members-only subscription will work in all apps and players that support podcast feeds, including Apple Podcasts and Pocket Casts, so you can easily listen from your mobile device on the go. The first 33 episodes of the Energy Transition Show were free, and always will be, so if you want to see what our full shows contain, feel free to check those out. Then we hope you'll become a member and support our show. In order to bring you the most unfiltered, unbiased, honest information possible, we have elected not to take any sponsors or advertisers. The Energy Transition Show is entirely supported by listener subscriptions. To become a subscriber and enjoy our full offerings, just point your browser to energytransitionshow.com and click the Become a Member button. Annual subscriptions, which include full access to our entire back catalog of full-length episodes, are just $60 a year. Monthly subscriptions are $6.99 a month and give you access to the 2 most recent episodes. Single episodes can be purchased for $7 each. We also offer discounted annual subscriptions for individual university students and professors, as well as group licenses for companies, nonprofits, and universities. So join us today and support our ad-free podcast featuring high-quality, cutting-edge interviews and news about the most important story of our time, energy transition. And now a quick look at some recent news items. Item 1. Greedflation may be a much larger component of inflation than previously thought. According to a report published in January by the Progressive Groundwork Collaborative think tank, corporate profits accounted for about 53% of inflation during last year's second and third quarters, whereas in the 40 years prior to the pandemic, profits accounted for just 11% of inflation. Prices for consumers rose by 3.4% over the past year, but input costs for producers only increased by 1%, according to the author's calculations, which were based on data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis and National Income and Products Accounts. The report's authors found executives bragging to shareholders on corporate earnings calls about keeping prices high as input costs fell, which increased their profits. Accordingly, the report calls for stronger policies to rein in what they called corporate profiteering. Nearly 60% of the drop in key inputs was driven by large declines in energy costs, such as jet fuel and diesel fuel, while transportation and warehousing costs have fallen by nearly 4% since their June 2022 peaks. But corporate producers have not dropped their prices in response because they have no incentive or compulsion to do so. Consumers are still paying about 25% more for groceries, the report notes, and more than 30% more for diapers since 2019. In fact, according to Isabella Weber, a University of Massachusetts Amherst economist, corporations exploit cost shocks caused by events such as the Ukraine war by coordinating price hikes in what she calls, quote, a form of implicit collusion. But while corporate profits as a share of national income are up by about 29%, workers' share of corporate earnings is still down from pre-pandemic levels. So there you have it. As Gernot pointed out in his article on the effects of the Ukraine war, data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that about half of the total inflation the U.S. experienced in 2022 owed to fossil fuel costs, and the other half, according to this Groundwork Collaborative report, owed to corporate greed. Which is why right-wing politicians and those who follow them instead blame inflation on wages and stimulus spending. Got to keep the loonies on the path. Item 2. As we noted in today's conversation, the global trade in LNG has expanded dramatically as a way to substitute for supplies of Russian gas, especially gas imported from Russia via pipeline. However, unlike the global trade in oil, attempts to box out Russian supplies through sanctions, tariffs, and other... Well, that's it for this episode of the Energy Transition Show. Thanks for listening. You can find our show archive and give us feedback and suggestions at energytransitionshow.com. On social media, you can follow us on Mastodon at transitionshow@mastodon.energy or on Twitter at transitionshow. Chris Nelder creates the show, Kevin Melsheimer edits it and makes us all sound brilliant, and Justin Ritchie produces our listener experience. Mike Sugar composed and produced our theme music, and you can find him at mikesugarmusic.com. The Energy Transition Show is a production of the XE Network.